Jonathan, it's clearly not over because we're just beginning yet another talks process. We've had one session which the DUP chose not to, certainly the First Minister chose not to attend. Do you think that given the shopping list has got longer now, that there is more of a chance or less of a chance of some kind of resolution to these outstanding issues, these seemingly intractable issues? I think you suggested to me earlier that perhaps the more issues you have in the pot, the better the chance there is of actually coming out with something where everybody wins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the length of the shopping list by itself doesn't necessarily make a negotiation less soluble. You can normally find more trade-offs if you can negotiate between issues, because you're giving something they want here and they're giving something you want there. You have to make sure if you're doing that, again, it's interesting for Northern Ireland, that you negotiate in parallel, not in sequence. What happens in some negotiations, for example, in Colombia at the moment, they start with item one and have to work their way through to item five. So if you don't agree on item one, you never get there. But assuming you're negotiating in parallel, you can then do trade-offs. So the length of the shopping list is not the problem. I think the problem here is much more the political will to find an agreement, and it has to be in the interest of everyone to find a political agreement. So I suppose it depends on whether they wish to keep Stormont up and running, or whether they wish to make it function smoothly, or not smoothly, but successfully. And that's the real issue, the political will there, rather than the length of the shopping list.
And do you think that all parties do want that to happen? The DUP say they do, Sinn Féin say they do, but of course there are those who wonder if Sinn Féin is more concerned about southern politics at the moment than it is about northern politics.
I'm not sure I'm well enough informed of politics here at the moment to really make an informed... I haven't talked to the leaders of all the parties, so I don't know what's in their heart. The only thing I do know is that in those circumstances, the main thing is to try and keep the talking going, because if you close the talking down, you end up with violence. That violence will fill the vacuum, and so you want the talking to continue until you get to a settlement. Although, if you think about the Middle East, what happens is that people feel that talking and process is simply used to obfuscate, to try and contain people. And I talk to Palestinians who are fed up with process and say, we want no more process, the process is just used to control us, we only want an agreement. But I have to say to them, how do you get to an agreement unless you've got process? There's a wonderful one-liner that sums it up from Shimon Peres, the president or former president of Israel, who says, in the Middle East, we all know how it's going to end up, more or less, in terms of territory, even in terms of refugees in Jerusalem. The problem is there isn't a process to get there. And he says, the good news is there's light at the end of the tunnel, and the bad news is there's no tunnel. And what you want to have here in Northern Ireland is a tunnel, and I guess that's what the talks are.
Yeah, I guess so. One of the things, of course, that people say is that these talks are slightly handicapped by the fact that there is no Jonathan Powell type figure. There's no, well, if you just don't answer your phone is the first thing I would say. But there's no access to number 10 in the way that there was to our politicians going back a decade or a decade and a half. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it doesn't seem to be that figure who is shuttling between the parties and encouraging. We have a process at the moment apparently being led by the Secretary of State and the Irish government. But there's no huge American involvement, and there doesn't seem to be a huge engagement on the part of the Prime Minister.
For this book, I went back to look at the negotiations, or at least the conflict from 1919 to 1921 with the original IRA. And it's absolutely fascinating, because the parallel, in fact, I was brave and took back it, and Ronan Fanning and Paul Bew both helped me to do it. And again, we started off saying, we will never talk to terrorists. Lloyd George says, we'll never talk to the murder gang. And then after, in late 1920, he starts trying to reach out to the IRA using a guy called Andy Cope, who they sent to Dublin to try and make contact with Michael Collins, and he managed to do so, and they start having private talks while denying that they're talking to them in order to get to a ceasefire, in order to get to negotiation. And the negotiation happens in the same room that our meeting happened. So, and apparently Lloyd George, according to his mistress and Secretary Frances Stevenson, was desperately nervous before the meeting and paced all round. He says she'd never seen him so excited. And he put up on the wall of the cabinet room a huge map of the British Empire, all coloured in red, to try and impress De Valera, who came to the first meeting, and Collins and the others. And they literally sat in the same chairs as we then had that meeting in December 97 with Adams and McGuinness. And I remember Adams and McGuinness coming in, also being rather nervous, and more TV cameras outside Downing Street than there'd been election 4 months before. 6 months before. And they before they sat down, McGuinness, to try and release the tension, said, "So this is where all the damage was done then." And I said, "Yeah, the IRA mortars landed in the garden behind you. My brother was here with John Major. He pulled him under the table. The windows blew in. Four overweight policemen came in." And he said, no. I was talking about the negotiations of Michael Collins." Because Tony and I had no knowledge of the negotiations of Michael Collins at all. But the symmetry had come all the way around. So the rather long way of answering your question, it's not about... And Lloyd George had a Welsh private secretary who worked for him on these negotiations, would have to go and meet Sinn Féin in their bedrooms, in the hotel, after midnight in London, try and do difficult negotiations and try to suggest ideas they could come back with and suggest with their ideas. So there are remarkable parallels in that. But I don't think you need to have a Welsh-speaking private secretary or a Welsh-named private secretary to do these things. I think there are all sorts of ways that you can do them. But usually having a third party does help in these circumstances.